Chapter 7. With the Master of the SN. A Farewell. Scrutiny. Maxilla was a veteran trader who had run the SN down the lanes from Thracian Primaris to the Grand Banks for 50 years. He told me he'd dealt in bulk consumables at the start of his career, then begun to specialize in exotic goods when the big bonded guilds began to dominate the wholesale market.
The SN's got speed, a sprint trader. Pays me better to carry luxury cargoes and deliver them express, even if I don't run at capacity.
You run this route regularly?
For the past few decades. It's seasonal. Sameter, Hesperus, Thracian, Hubris, Gudrun, sometimes to Messina, too. When Dormant finishes on Hubris, there'll be a lot more work there.
We sat in the luxurious surroundings of his audience suite, sipping vintage Amasek from large crystal glasses. Maxilla was showing off, but that was acceptable. He had a ship and a reputation to be proud of.
So you know these routes well, Fischig put in.
Maxilla smiled. He was a sinewy man of indeterminate age, dressed in a full-skirted coat of red velvet with wide button-back cuffs and an extravagant black lace cravat. His smile showed teeth that were inlaid with mother-of-pearl. Ostentation was common among ship's masters. It was part of showing off. Forget family lineage and noble blood, one had told me once. The lineage and pedigree of starships is where the new imperial nobility is to be found. Ship's masters were the real imperial aristocracy. So Maxilla seemed to think, anyway. His face was powdered with white skin dye, and he wore a sapphire as a beauty spot on his cheek. His imposing two-horned wig was spun from silver thread. Heavy signet rings clinked against his balloon glass as he lifted it.
Yes, Chasner, I know them well.
I don't think we need to start interrogating Master Maxilla yet, Fischig, I said plainly. Betancourt snorted, and Maxilla chuckled. Fischig glowered into his Amasek. A servitor, its torso and head casing wrought to resemble an antique ship's figurehead, a full-breasted damsel with gilt snakes in her hair, hummed across the expensive Selgioni rug and offered us trays of delicacies. I took one, out of politeness. It was a sliver of perfect kettlefish, exquisitely sautéed and wrapped in a nearly transparent leaf of pastry. Betancourt helped himself to several.
"You're a Glavian?"
Maxilla asked Betancourt. The two promptly fell to discussing the merits of the famous Glavian long prow. I lost interest and looked around the suite. Amid the finery were a series of priceless portraits from the Sameter school, marble busts of planetary rulers, a Jacaro light sculpture, antique weapons and mounted suits of ceremonial mirror armor from Vitria. Amos would appreciate this, I thought. It was to be a journey of more than a week. I'd make sure he got a chance to see it.
"Do you know Gudrun?"
Maxilla was asking me. I shook my head. "This will be my first visit. I have only been in this subsector a year or so."
"A fine place, though you'll find it busy. There's a month-long festival underway to celebrate the founding of a new guard regiment. If you have the time, I recommend the Imperial Academy of Fine Arts and the Guild Museums in Dorset."
"I may be a little occupied," he shrugged.
"I always make the time to do more than simply work, Inquisitor. But I know your calling is rather more strenuous than mine."
I tried to get the measure of him, but I was failing so far. He had agreed to give us passage, and for a modest fee, considering what he might have demanded. I had already paid him with an imperial bond. Most ship masters don't like to turn down a request from an inquisitor, even if they are charging. Was it just that Maxilla wanted to keep sweet with the Ordos? Or was he simply a generous man? Or did he have something to hide? I wondered. Truthfully, I didn't care. The other possibility was that he might think this entitled him to some future favour. If he did, he would be wrong. The SN left Hubris later that day, executed the translation to the Empyrean effortlessly, and made best speed for Gudrun. Maxilla provided quarters for us all in his state apartments, but we spent most of our time on the cutter, working. Betancourt and the servitors ran an overhaul of the ship. Loink slept. Fischig, Amos, and I worked through the paperwork on the evidence and through conjectures back and forth. I still held back what little I knew of the Pontius from Fischig, but it wouldn't be long before he started to make the connection himself. Beckwin kept herself to herself. She'd borrowed a set of fatigues from a work locker, and I saw her about the ship, reading books she'd taken from my personal library. Poetry, mostly, and some historical and philosophical works. I didn't mind. It kept her out of my way. On the third day of the voyage, I met Maxilla again, and we walked the upper promenade deck together. He seemed to enjoy telling me the histories and provenances of the ormolu-framed paintings displayed there. We saw the occasional servitor at work, but so far there had not been the slightest glimpse of any other living crew person.
"Your friend Fischig, he is an unsubtle man," he remarked at length.
"He's no friend, and yes, he is unsubtle. Has he been asking you questions again?"
"I saw him briefly on the foredecks yesterday. He asked me if I knew a man called Eichlone. Even showed me a picture."
"And what did you say?" He flashed his pearly teeth at me.
"Now who's interrogating?"
"Forgive my imprudence." He waved a lace-cuffed hand.
"Oh, forget it. Ask anyway. Get your questions out into the open so we can clear the air."
"Very well. What did you tell him?"
"That I did not."
I nodded. "Thank you for your candour."
"But I was lying."
I turned and looked at Maxilla sharply. He was still smiling. I had the sudden horrible notion that we had all walked into a trap and dearly wished I was carrying a weapon.
"Don't worry. I lied to him because he's an arrogant runt. But I'll give you the truth of it. I would never want to put myself in the path of an imperial inquisition."
"A wise philosophy." Maxilla flopped down on a satin couch and smoothed the front of his coat.
"I was last on Thracian Primaris 2 months ago. There was talk of some cargo, and I held some meetings. The usual. And that's when this Eichlone enters the frame. Didn't call himself that, of course. Bless me, I forget the name he used. But it was him. Had others with him. A sour, tight lot. One called Kroetz, a trade envoy. He tried to have me believe your man was authorized by the Guild Synesius, but that was rubbish, even though Kroetz had the paperwork."
"What did he want?"
"He was hiring to make a run, empty, to Gudrun, collect a cargo there and bring it to Hubris."
"The nature of the cargo?"
"We never got that far. I turned him down. It was preposterous. He was offering a decent fee, but I knew I'd make 10 times that with my regular work."
"You didn't get a contact name on Gudrun, either."
"My dear Inquisitor, I'm just a shipman,
not a detective." "Do you know who finally took his work?"
"I know who didn't." He sat forward. "I happen to keep up dialogues with other masters. Seems several of us turned it down, and most for the same reason."
"Which was?"
"It felt like trouble."
By the fifth day, my sleep patterns had begun to return to normal. Too normal, in fact, as Eichlone began to stalk my dreams again. In sleep he came to me, taunting and threatening. I don't remember much detail, except the after-image of his grinning face each time I woke. In hindsight, though Eichlone was certainly in my dreams, I don't think it was his smiling face I was remembering. The SN translated back into real space and entered the Gudrun system on the morning of the eighth day, ahead of schedule. Maxilla had boasted his ship was fast under optimum conditions, and the boast hadn't been empty. I had made arrangements with him to leave the Empyrean in the outreach of the system, considerably short of the busy local trade lanes that most arrivals to Gudrun followed. He agreed without question. It would only be a short delay.
"Who was she?"
Mequin asked me, as we stood at an observation bay, watching the pale shape of Vibin's shrouded body slowly turn end over end, as it drifted away from the SN. "A friend. A comrade," I replied.
"Is this how she wanted to go?" she asked.
"I don't think she wanted to go at all," I said. Nearby, Amos and Betancourt gazed gravely out of the thick port. Amos's expression was unreadable. Betancourt's dark face was drawn and anguished. Loink hadn't joined us, and neither had Fischig. But as I turned, I saw Maxilla standing respectfully at the rear of the observation bay, wearing a long morning coat of black silk and a short periwig with black ribbons. He moved forward as he saw me look.
"I hope I'm not intruding. My respects to your lost comrade."
I nodded my thanks. He hadn't needed to make this effort, but it seemed appropriate for the ship's master to be present during a void burial. "I'm not sure how these things are formally conducted, Maxilla," I said, "though I think this is what she would have asked for. I have spoken the Imperial Creed and the Oration of the Dead."
"Then you have done her fine service. If it is appropriate..."
He waved forward one of his gold-plated figurehead servitors, which carried a salver of glasses and a decanter.
"It is a tradition to drink a toast to the departed."
We all took a glass. "Loris Vibben," I said. A minute or so's silence followed. Then we slowly dispersed. I told Maxilla we could begin our approach run to Gudrun now, and he estimated it would take 2 hours to reach the inner system. Returning to the cutter, I found myself walking with Bequin. She still wore the old work suit she had liberated, though somehow it seemed to enhance her beauty rather than stifle it.
"We're almost there," she said.
"Indeed.
What will my duties be?"
I had yet to explain to her what she was, or why I had recruited her. There had been ample time en route, but I had been putting it off, I suppose. I'd found time to show Amos the finery of Maxilla's staterooms and play regicide with Betancourt. I wished I could throw off my distaste at just simply being around her. I walked with her to the promenade deck and began to explain. I don't know how I expected her to take it. When she took it badly and became upset, my response was barely controlled irritation. I knew it was her nature that was making me react this way, and fought to find the sympathy she deserved. She sat weeping on a shot silk chair beneath one of the massive paintings, a hunting scene of nobles riding thoroughbred Ursidons in the chase. Every now and then she would blurt out a curse or whine a regret. It was clear she wasn't upset that I wanted to employ her. It was simply the fundamental knowledge that she was abnormal. A friendless, loveless life of woes and hard knocks suddenly had an explanation, and that explanation was her own nature. I believe that she had always, stoically, blamed the galaxy as a whole for her troubles. Now I'd as good as kicked that emotional crutch away. I damned myself for not thinking the consequences through. I'd robbed her of self-esteem and what little confidence she could muster. I'd shown up her lifelong efforts to find comfort, love, and respect as hollow, self-destructive, self-denying futility. I tried to talk about the work she could do for me. She wasn't much interested. In the end, I pulled up another chair and sat next to her as she worked the painful truth through her mind. I was still sitting there when I received a vox signal. It was Maxilla.
"I wonder if you could join me on the bridge, Inquisitor. I require your assistance."
The bridge of the SN was a wide domed chamber with floors and pillars of red-black marble. Silver servitors, immaculate and intricate as sculptures, were stationed at console positions sunk into the floor, their delicate geared arms working banks of controls set into polished mahogany fascias. The air was cool and still, and the only sound was the gentle hum and whir of the working machines. Maxilla, still dressed in his mourning robes, sat in a massive leather throne overlooking the room from a marble dais. Articulated limbs extending from the rear of the throne suspended picked plates and consoles in his reach, but his attention was on the massive main observation port that dominated the front of the bridge. I strode across the floor from the entrance. Each servitor wore a mask of chaste gold, fashioned into a human face of classical perfection.
"Inquisitor," Maxilla said, rising.
"Your crew are all servitors," I remarked.
"Yes," he said distractedly. "They are more reliable than pure flesh."
I made no other comment. Maxilla's relationship with the SN seemed to me akin to the way the Adeptus Mechanicus worshipped their god machines. Constant involvement with such ancient instruments had convinced them of the natural inferiority of the human species. I followed his gaze and looked at the main port. The gleaming sphere of Gudrun lay ahead, a creamy swirl of clouds stained with the lime-green phantoms of great forests under the climate cover. Clusters of black shapes thickly dotted the space between us and the planet. These were huge groups of orbiting ships, I realized. Massive dreadnoughts at high anchor, trains of great merchant ships, convoys of trade freighters streaming in under tug supervision. I had seldom seen such a wealth of orbital activity. "Is there a problem?" I asked him. He looked over at me, something like anxiety in his eyes.
I have performed legal manoeuvres and entered the trade lane approach. Gudrun Control has allocated me a high anchor buoy. All relevant data is in order and my tariffs are paid. But I have just been informed that we are to be boarded and inspected.
This is unusual.
It's been 10 years since anyone even suggested such a thing of my ship.
Explanation?
They say security. I told you there was a founding festival underway. You can see considerable portions of Battlefleet Scarus on station. I think the military is being over-careful of its interests here just now.
You mentioned my assistance.
The inspection launch is on its way. I feel it would facilitate matters if they were met by a ship's master and an Imperial Inquisitor.
I can't pull strings, Maxilla. He laughed humorlessly and looked me in the eye.
Of course you can. But that's not what I'm asking.
With an Inquisitor present, they will treat the SM with more respect. I'll not have them root through this vessel mindlessly.
I thought for a moment.
This smacked of the favour I had a feeling he might call in. Worse, it stank of impropriety on his part. I'll agree to be present for the sake of order, provided you can assure me you have nothing to hide.
Inquisitor Eisenhorn, I...
Save your indignation for the inspection, Maxilla. Your assurance is all I require. If I assist you only to find you have some dirty secret or illicit cargo, you will have a great deal more to worry about than the Imperial Navy. There was a look of great disappointment on his face. Either he was a superb actor, or I had truly wounded his feelings.
I have nothing to hide, he hissed. I fancied you and I had become, if not friends, then decent acquaintances, at least this voyage. I have shown you hospitality and freely given information into your confidence. I am hurt that you still suspect me.
Suspicion is my business, Maxilla. If I have wronged you, my apologies.
Nothing to hide,
he repeated, almost to himself, and led me off the bridge. A navy pinnace, matte grey and deeply hulled, drew alongside the massive SN and clamped itself to the fore starboard air gate. Maxilla and I were there to meet it, along with Fischig and two of the ship's primary servitors, spectacular creations of gold and silver machine parts. I'd summon Fischig on the basis that if the sight of an Inquisitor would help, then an Arbites chastener would do no harm either. Betancourt was instructed to keep everyone else with the cutter. The gate locks cycled open, and the hatch jaws gaped, exhaling torrents of steam. A dozen large figures emerged through the haze. They were all dressed in the grey and black body armour of naval security, with the crest and sector symbol of Battlefleet Scarus displayed on their chests, and gold braid edging their epaulets. All were masked in form-moulded ceramite helmets, with lowered visor plates and rebreathers. They were armed with compact short-frame autoguns. The leader stepped forward, and his men grouped behind him. They didn't form a neat echelon. Messy, I thought. Casual, lacking the usual drilled discipline of the infamous naval security arm. These men were bored and going through the motions. They wanted this formality over and done too.
Tobias Maxilla,
barked the leader, his voice distorted by his mask and vox amplified.
I am Maxilla, said the ship's master, stepping forward.
You have been notified that an inspection of your vessel is due. Furnish me with crew lists and cargo manifests. Your full cooperation is expected.
At a nod from Maxilla, one of the servitors moved forward on silent tracks and handed the security details leader a data slate with the relevant material. He didn't look at it.
Do you have anything you wish to volunteer before the inspection begins? It will go easier for you if you make submissions of contraband.
I watched the exchange. There were 12 troops, hardly enough to search a ship the size of the SN. Where were their servitors, their scanning units, their crowbars, multi-keys and heat detectors? They had no way of knowing who I was from my appearance, but why had they not remarked on the presence of an Arbites? My vox channel was set to the cutters. I didn't speak, but I keyed it 3 times. A non-verbal part of Glossia, Betancourt would understand. You haven't yet identified yourself, I said. The lead security trooper turned to look at me. I saw only my reflection in his tint-coated visor.
What?
You haven't identified yourself or shown your warrant of practice. It is a requirement of such inspections.
We're naval security,
he began angrily, stepping towards me. His men faltered. "You could be anybody." I pulled out my inquisitorial rosette. "I am Gregor Eisenhorn, Imperial Inquisitor. We will do this correctly, or not at all."
"You're Eisenhorn," he said.
There was no surprise in his voice at all. A tiny thing to notice, but enough for me. The warning was already rising in my throat as their guns came up.